Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Stacy Sutton Kirby. Thanks for being with us, Stacy.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. Hi, Elizabeth. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Stacy. Can you start out by telling our listeners how you got involved in veganism and animal issues?
Sure. A long time ago, way back in the 90s, I read a book called Diet for a Small Planet, and it really opened my eyes to the environmental issues surrounding animal agriculture. For example, all the land that's used to grow grain for cows, for example, all the water that's used in animal agriculture. And I understood, my big takeaway from that book was the food insecurity issues, the social injustice issues there. You have hungry people, they're not being fed, but these animals were being fed. And honestly, that the animal cruelty aspect of animal agriculture, that didn't come to me till much later. I think it was around 2011, maybe 2010, late 2010, I saw the movie Earthlings, and that is a pretty intense film, and it had a profound effect on me. Going forward, I knew that I was going to be vegan. I was no longer going to eat any food that was derived from animals, and nor would I wear their hair or their fur or use makeup that was tested on them or clean my house with products that were tested on animals. It was just such an eye-opener. So I've been vegan since 2011 and never looked back.
It's hard to go all the way sometimes, especially when we're talking about household products and cosmetics. It's you have to dig so deep and learn so much. Many of us, like me, for example, I'm not a full vegan, I guess. I don't do any animal products in clothes. And of course, I don't eat animal products, but household things, really hard to find and expensive.
Well, I usually go to like Pangea when they were open and some of the other vegan essentials, and they have lots of household items there. And I find that they're getting more and more affordable as time goes on, as demand increases for products that are eco, environmentally friendly and animal friendly.
That's true, Liz.
Like if I do a search, you know, like you can do a search on the Target app and you do for vegan products, and it brings up a ton of different options. And obviously now we have the luxury of looking for products with the leaping bunny on it to you know, try to make sure that they weren't either tested on animals as an end product, or at any part in the creation of that product did they test any of the components of it on animals. So we're definitely getting better, at least. But you know, Stacy, you sort of took this new knowledge and were obviously applying it to various parts of your personal life, but you also then sort of made a decision to, you know, delve in more into helping animals, but through legislation. And I know you've, you know, done some advocacy work for pit bulls. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, at the same time that I was learning more and more about how bunnies were treated cruelly when products were being tested on them, I was having the personal experience of being harassed because I had pit bulls and I lived in a condo complex where the HOA president thought they were bad dogs, just inherently bad dogs. And so I started working with a local group that rehomed and rescued pit bulls. And that's where I started learning about breed specific legislation. And I started learning about dog fighting and all these things that people do to this wonderfully loyal, loving, affectionate breed. And after being involved with the local group, I thought, gosh, you know, what else could I be doing? This is just so crazy that these wonderful dogs are abused this way. And then the Michael Vick story broke somewhere around that time. And I think that brought national attention to the issue. But, you know, like you say, I was wondering what could I do? So I reached out to the Texas Humane Legislation Network, and boy, did they put me to work. They had lots of stuff going on. Of course, they've been advocates against breed-specific legislation and advocates for companion animals for 45 years, but they also work on Texas native wildlife issues and captive exotic animals like the big cats in private possession. They work on all sorts of animal populations and all sorts of issues. And I started out as a volunteer. I'm now director of government relations at THLN. And we just finished the well, gosh, it feels like it's just going on and on. The regular session of the 87th Texas Legislature just completed May 31st. And I was down there at the Texas Legislature pretty much every day during this COVID session.
What were you working on during this session, Stacey?
The priority legislation for this session for THLN was the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act. The Safe Outdoor Dogs Act would have improved the current health and safety code to make it illegal to leave a dog unattended, tethered, without food, water, adequate shelter, and to use a chain. Now, currently, that is legal in Texas. And most importantly, there's a 24-hour waiting period before an officer can do anything to interrupt that inhumane tethering. The law requires, under the Health and Safety Code, that officer give a warning. As you can anticipate, that really just creates a loophole of pretty much a 24-hour reset over and over. So the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act would have fixed that by requiring adequate shelter, requiring shade, requiring access to drinkable water, and striking the use of chains and the warning period. And it passed both the House and the Senate. And boy, I was so excited because, you know, finally, after this 6-year effort to get that law passed, it was going to be a done deal. And then the governor vetoed the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act on June 18th. And we were all pretty shocked. Now, there were definitely some victories for animals down at the Capitol this session, bills that passed into law. But that one was a real shocker. Yeah.
What was the reasoning behind the governor's veto? I mean, if it passes both chambers, you would think he wouldn't get involved.
I read that he said it was excessive micromanaging, but it sounded like he was just making up an excuse. Tell us, Stacey, what's the reasoning behind his veto?
You know, you're exactly right, Greg. In his official proclamation, the governor said that the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act was micromanagement and that on pain of criminal penalties, someone would be required to look at things such as how long a dog stayed in the back of a pickup or the tailoring of the dog's collar. But here's the thing. The requirement to put a properly fitted collar or harness on the dog, that's already in the Health and Safety Code. So that wasn't anything new. And there wasn't anything new in the Safe Outdoor Dogs Act with regard to how long a tether needed to be. So I really couldn't make a whole lot of sense about that, you know, that it didn't seem to match up with what is currently in the law. Safe Outdoor Dogs Act would not have changed those provisions. But I think more importantly, I would want to tell people, we were in constant conversation with the governor's office and they knew about this legislation. All of the legislators knew about this legislation. It had 100 co-sponsors and co-authors. There were 88 co-sponsors in the House and it passed. I want to say that the vote was 83-32 in the House and it passed the Senate 27-3 because we have 31 senators. And I believe it was either 7 or 9 senators put their name to the bill. So, you know, just bipartisan. It wasn't seen as rural or urban, as Democrat or Republican. It was just seen as a piece of legislation that people could see eye to eye on because no one wants dogs treated cruelly. And this was an easy fix to shore up the loopholes in the current law. So I couldn't reconcile what I read in the proclamation with what I knew to be the fact pattern. All I can tell you is that once we learned of that, we made polite overtures to the governor's office because, of course, we'd be willing to work with them to move forward and find out, you know, how can we fix the things you are concerned about here? If there's been a misunderstanding, how can we clear that up?
Also, in November of 2022, there's a re-election of the governor of Texas, and Abbott is running for a third term. And, you know, we could do without him. We could do with somebody new. And maybe we could get the Outdoor Safe Dog Act passed again in the next session.
Yeah, we're not going to leave any stone unturned in terms of making outdoor dogs safe. And I would say that in the interim, it's such a long wait, 2 years before we get a chance to go back to the regular session. THLN does help folks on the local level. So if you are in a municipality, your municipality might rely on the current state law that has those flaws in it, or maybe your local municipality has a better tethering law. If they rely on the local state law, which a lot of municipalities do that, they just copy the section from the state law and put it in their local animal ordinances. We have a tethering toolkit on our website, and we work with folks to help them craft local ordinances and help them through the steps of working with their local city council to get that passed. So we won't give up. We're going to keep raising awareness, and we're going to keep working with folks wherever we can to help outdoor dogs.
I would add too that, I don't know if we covered it earlier, but you also had the buy-in of law enforcement as well on this, and you collaborated with so many different entities and individuals to make sure that this bill was really solid and strong. And as you alluded to, people sort of forget in Texas, the legislature only meets every 2 years. So it's really particularly frustrating when so many great people invest all their time in these efforts and really speaks to the importance of making sure that everyone signs up for THLN's emails and gets their action alerts. And so that, you know, fortunately out in the west part of the state here, we've been pretty lucky with our elected officials in terms of their support for animal protection bills. But, you know, it's always good for our legislators to hear from us too and what matters, communicating with them friendly and letting them know even during these off session times, hey, look, you know, thank you for supporting that bill. We'd love to see it happen again. And that also makes them feel good about the good work that they're doing. But we'll hope for a better turnaround in the next time. But sort of going back to some of the other positive things that happened in this current session, what were some of the other successful efforts that you all engaged in?
Well, we supported and we're very happy and proud that Senate Bill 48 got passed, the animal possession ban that was championed by none other than ALDF. That gives judges more discretion to keep animals out of the hands of folks who are under community supervision, that is, they're on probation, or they have previously been convicted of animal cruelty. And that's fantastic because we know that animal cruelty is the number one indicator that somebody will commit violence against another human. And we also know that, in particular, the folks who tend to be convicted to get into trouble with animal cruelty, there's some pretty identifiable groups. One of them is hoarders, and hoarding is really a mental health situation, and there is a nearly 100% recidivism rate with animal hoarders. And so it's really important that they be prohibited, legally prohibited, from acquiring more animals. Oftentimes they are delusional. They don't really understand that they are harming the animals. They think they are caring for them. Another group of offenders that absolutely know what they are doing are folks who harm animals to intimidate and control other humans. That often we're talking about domestic abuse and family violence, and yeah, Keeping animals out of those folks' hands is really important. Once again, harming the animal is a leading indicator that the violence will escalate against that intimate partner. And so really glad to see that got passed, and congratulations to ALDF on that victory.
Yeah, thanks. And obviously, thanks for your support on that. That was a bill that actually went in 2019 that I flew to Austin to testify before the committee about that particular bill. We're optimistic back then, but it sort of a common sense bill, just giving judges discretion, the ability to look at the circumstances in the case and, you know, consider whether the chances of recidivism and things like that. So we thought for sure it would sail through last time, but, you know, being the legislature, the fun and eclectic place that it is, you never really know. But I was really happy that it passed this time. I didn't go to testify for the hearing, so I won't take it personal that it was my involvement, but thanks. And what I know there was, and you know, part of the work that you all do is trying to fight bad bills. There weren't quite as many this year, I don't think, unless my memory is failing me, but it seems like most of the bills that you all worked on were in the positive side.
This session was somewhat constrained with it being a COVID session. And folks were warned early on. I say warned, but you know, we all understood that it was going to be harder to get into hearings and limited capacity in the hearing rooms, and you know, it was just, it was harder to access legislators. And so the overall volume of bills, I believe, was lower. But as you mentioned, there still were a number of victories for animals, and maybe not as many bad ones to fend off, but we did have to work on, we did have to work to push back on some of the bad legislation. But I'd love to tell you about some of the good ones that passed. How about courthouse dogs? I could start with that one.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So courthouse dogs, House Bill 1071, makes it legal for specially trained facility animals to accompany vulnerable witnesses in court proceedings. Now, this law has already existed at the federal level. And in fact, it was Texas Senator John Cornyn who championed it at the federal level, but that only affected federal courts. And it didn't mean that in other Texas courts that, for example, a victim of child abuse or domestic abuse would be able to be accompanied by one of these specially trained dogs. And we know that these dogs have a real calming effect on these vulnerable witnesses. We also know that for someone who's gone through trauma, retelling your story can be re-traumatizing in and of itself. And so if you can give that kind of support to a witness, they can get crucial testimony into the record, and that helps hold abusers accountable. So we think it's excellent that this was passed. We were proud to testify and submit written material in support of this bill. And I believe that goes into effect September 1st.
I was just going to say that sounds like a really helpful bill for people to help them make it through a very trying situation.
Yeah, especially for the kiddos. The images that I've seen, oftentimes it really looks like the child is responding to the questions they're being asked, but they are touching the dog, maybe petting, hugging the dog, talking to the dog. And boy, I sure do remember talking to my dog when I was sad or, working through some tough stuff. So I think it's excellent that we finally have that option in Texas courts. Another good one that got passed was House Bill 604. This is a mandatory microchip scanning bill. So prior to this session, you might be surprised that an animal shelter or an animal services agency or a rescue group that does intake of animals, they weren't legally required to scan a found pet for a microchip, but they will be now. And we think that, you know, from our point of view, that's pretty much a no-brainer. Go ahead and scan the animal for a microchip so that you can contact the registered owner and they can be reunified with their family. But what we found when we were doing the research, getting ready for the hearing and helping the legislators who were bringing this bill forward, it was Representative Candy Noble and Senator Jane Nelson, is that using a microchip scanner to do what they call return in the field, that is scanning the animal for microchip as soon as is practicable, saves money. It saves taxpayer dollars because it increases the chance that the animal will be returned to their rightful owner. And it lessens the amount of time and resources that are used to do intake at the shelter. So it boosts reunifications and it saves taxpayer dollars. And it certainly reduces the stress that people and their pets feel when they're separated.
And it saves lives of animals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for anybody who would be interested in finding out more about how they could apply for grant money to cover the cost of purchasing a microchip scanner for their nonprofit organization or shelter or animal services agency, they can go to our website and we will have that information up, or they can contact me, Stacy@thln.org. That was one of the things that made the legislation palatable, is that the representative and the senator, you know, they didn't want people not to comply with the law because they didn't have the microchip scanners. So they reached out and found funding organizations that would help supply those scanners.
Yeah, that's great news, and something you definitely would have taken for granted, assumed all the different entities would be doing that. And I just, as a side note for those individually in El Paso here, they implemented a policy where you could take, if you do find any pets yourself personally, you can take them to the local fire department and have them scanned there. And also, you know, oftentimes you have luck going to a veterinary office. And I would offer one piece of advice is if you go somewhere and they don't find the chip, you know, sometimes go to a second place on the off chance that maybe their reader isn't working great, or maybe they just didn't happen to check the right spot or the chip moved around. Just a little side note, but you know, I fell in love with THLN's work when I was in law school, and back then it was working to stop the horse slaughter plants from reopening in Texas and getting animals included in protective orders and trying to close it, which that bill also took a lot longer than I would have expected. and then also, you know, trying to tighten up some parts of the animal cruelty law that were sort of leaving some openings where prosecutions couldn't be pursued because the animal did not belong to someone if it was a companion animal, but it didn't have an owner, for lack of a better way to say it. But, you know, a lot of the other great bills you all done, you know, you've done work in puppy mills and the gas chamber euthanasia. Trying to think of some of the other ones that you all have done over the years. It's been a great organization and has worked for a long time on these very difficult issues in a state that isn't always as progressive as it should be when it comes to animal protection. But maybe, I don't know if you want to think of any of the other ones that really maybe stood out to you that you've worked on in the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. The companion animal bills always do get a lot of attention because folks can really relate to that. But the animals that we may not think of very often, such as roosters that were used in cockfighting. So Texas is one of those hot spots where that activity was going on, but THLN led the charge to make that illegal and enhanced criminal penalties against cockfighting. THLN has worked on bills protecting Texas native wildlife. As a matter of fact, this last session, we helped get, we supported a bill that would make it illegal to release, wait for it, Burmese pythons in Texas because how the negative impact they have on native species and how they're just, they're a public safety threat and they, they're just a terrible menace once they get loose. They have no natural predators. I think probably one of the bills that just is near and dear to me, and we've worried about these big cats in private possession for so long, the Dangerous Wild Animals Act. And we're going to continue to work to protect these animals. For example, under the Dangerous Wild Animals Act, it made it to where you should register with your county if your county allowed you to have a big cat, for example, like a lion, a tiger. Right now, there's some federal legislation called the Big Cat Public Safety Act, and THLN is working on that to get that federal legislation passed because the patchwork of regulation and laws about the keeping of these dangerous wild animals is just, it's just not working. So you can go to our website, thln.org, and we have the list of legislative priorities up there. We also have a list of past victories, and anybody can reach out to me at any time if they have a question about particular protections for particular animal populations or a particular law that was passed or you know, questions they have about what is or isn't legal in regards to animals, I'll be happy to answer. Stacy@thln.org and visit us at www.thln.org. And we're also on Facebook and we're on the Twitters and we're on the Instagram.
Yeah, that's great, Stacy. You know, definitely folks, definitely encourage everyone to go onto their website, sign up for their emails. You know, another thing you consider doing is purchasing the spay and neuter your pet license plate that's offered. And there's information on your website about that. But it's been great to catch up with you. And thanks for all your hard work during this last legislative session and all the many ones before that. Y'all really have had some great success stories. And hopefully more people will go and sign up and just keep an eye on it. And the great thing about, you know, commitment to an organization like yours or helping out from time to time is it's really just a minimum basis. You know, with the legislature only meeting for a few months every 2 years, you know, it really isn't a big burden to carry. So I definitely encourage everyone to sign up. But thanks for being on the show again with us, Stacy. And we'll look forward to seeing what other accomplishments you all have to come.
Thank you so much.